Hey guys, Mike Valeni for Cash the Ticket podcast. If you like sports betting or if you just like sports, it's the podcast for you. We try to cover all the big games and maybe some of the games you didn't even know were important, give you some angles, pick some winners, have a good time, and hopefully help you meander through college and pro football season. So join us a couple times a week to get all your information you need to bet the games that you watch. It's Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. Hey guys, Mike Valeni for Cash the Ticket podcast. If you like sports betting or if you just like sports, it's the podcast for you. We try to cover all the big games and maybe some of the games you didn't even know were important, give you some angles, pick some winners, have a good time, and hopefully help you meander through college and pro football season. So join us a couple times a week to get all your information you need to bet the games that you watch. It's Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
After Tua's injury and after he was taken to the hospital and after we got the report from the Dolphins that he had suffered head and neck injuries, but that he was conscious and had movement in all his extremities, and that he would be accompanying his teammates home. After all of that, after a scoreless third quarter, the Cincinnati Bengals find another gear in the fourth quarter. And on Thursday Night Football to kick off week number four, the Bengals look more like the Bengals that we remember from late last season.
Second and 10, Bridgewater fires a quick pass,
oh, intercepted pick it, baby,
at the 9-yard line.
Whoa.
Running the ball back now to the 20, 25, 30. Von Bell to the 45, the 50,
nice,
and the Dolphins' 45-yard line. Von Bell's
big
second interception of the game gives the Bengals the ball back in Miami territory with 3 minutes and 5 seconds to go. Third down and goal from the two. They still have a sixth offensive lineman in. Burrow wants to throw.
Easy.
His pass,
yeah,
caught by Hurst.
Easy.
Touchdown.
Nice.
Bengals.
Nice.
And that should be coffin nails.
Bam, bam, bam.
That, of course, is the play-by-play team of Dan Horde and Dave Lapham, Bengals Radio, and Von Bell with a huge performance for the Cincinnati Bengals defense. The defense has played fairly well. He also had four tackles. And if you think about the guys in the trenches for both the defense and the offense, starting to find their footing. Burrow only sacked one time in this game. One time in week number three, so that's twice in a total of 2 weeks. They have two takeaways. And as I say, this team looks a lot more like the one that we remember from last year's AFC Championship. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Good to have you with us on this final show of the work week. We're live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. Whether you're looking to purchase a new home or refinance yours, Rocket Mortgage can help you get there. For home loan solutions that fit your life, Rocket can. If you missed it, wanted to pass along the update again about Tua Tagovailoa. He actually was back at the stadium in Cincinnati to rejoin his teammates, take the bus to the airport, and fly home on the team plane. His parents were in Cincinnati for this game. And so they were with him at the hospital. They were rushed to the hospital as well. They were able to sit with him. And then he was able to kiss them goodbye before he got on that bus and the team plane to go back to South Florida. According to Josh Moser, who joined us from Paycor, Tua was smiling. He was laughing. He was jovial. He was typical Tua, in the words of Josh. So that's all good news. He was wearing a neck brace. His equipment and his uniform were cut off of him at the hospital. And so in order that they didn't move him, they cut off his equipment. And he was wearing scrubs onto the team plane. But you can imagine what a relief it was for his teammates to see him and maybe speak to him and to know that he was with them and they weren't leaving him behind in Cincinnati to fly back to South Florida. Wow. The loss almost seems inconsequential Though, of course, they did end up losing 27-15, and the Bengals will certainly take the win. You can find me on Twitter, A-Law Radio. We haven't even scratched the surface, really, of week number four. We're working on the after-hours game of the week poll, but in the aftermath of Tua's injury and all the questions about why he was on the field, why he wasn't held out of this game, considering that he was wobbly and that he was day-to-day all week with what the team was calling a back injury, but many people determined it must have been a concussion or a head injury. I do know how social media goes. It's a mob mentality, and once one person comes up with a hot take like that, pretty soon you're going to get it from everywhere in all corners. I don't think we have any reason to believe that Mike McDaniel would knowingly put a player at risk. So if you believe that, well then, I'm not sure where you're getting that from, but then you have to believe it was negligent and it was intentional, that he cared so little about his quarterback's health and well-being. Forget the fact that a concussed Tua wouldn't be the best thing for your football team anyway, if all you cared about was the win. But I just have a hard time making that leap, jumping to the conclusion that Mike McDaniel and the Dolphins don't care about their franchise quarterback on a Thursday night game on the road when it's a quick turnaround. He's your franchise quarterback. We're not talking about some scrub QB that you have no plans for. This is the guy that they've chosen to be the face of their franchise. They've surrounded him with weapons. The team started out 3-0. It just, big picture, it doesn't seem like they would have cared that much anyway, that they would have put him at risk. But of course, the questions have to be asked, and Mike McDaniel did answer and got upset when a reporter said to him, would you change anything? Knowing what you know now, would you go back? Would you change anything about the way you handled his injury last week or the fact that he was even playing in the second half against the Bills?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. If I would have, that would be irresponsible in the first place, and I shouldn't be in this position. I do not have any, like, absolutely zero patience for or will ever put a player in a position to, for them to be in harm's way. That is, like, not what I'm about at all, and no outcome of a game would ever influence me being irresponsible as the head coach of the football team.
You would have to believe that guy cared so little or had so little regard for Tua that he okayed him being on the field. Or that the Dolphins lied about Tua being cleared through concussion protocol. Now, I suppose there is the chance that he was cleared and yet still wasn't right, but we didn't see any of that to start the game. There wasn't any indication that Tua wasn't mentally okay and that he was still suffering from any type of concussion symptoms. Now, head injuries are different from human to human. I have heard of cases where the symptoms of head injuries and concussions are delayed. But he had to go through protocols to get back on the field, and all week they were talking about a back injury. He didn't look like he was feeling any ill effects from a back injury either, though, so the questions will be asked and answered. The NFL PA is conducting an investigation, which now will have an extra wrinkle following Thursday night football. You can find us on Twitter, After Hours CBS. Also on our Facebook page. And again, we'll have the After Hours Game of the Week poll coming up in minutes here. We've been a little busy. People ask me a lot about working overnights and what it's like. And I tell them, man, there's just as much breaking news in the aftermath of games. There's just as much to talk about. And a lot of times we have these nights where maybe have a plan and then poof, whatever. It gets all blown to heck because there's breaking news or there's a bigger story, and you got to be able to roll with the poo, so to speak, roll with the punches. Our phone number is 855-212-4227. We know now, by the way, that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers will be hosting their game coming up on Sunday night. And so the NFL has chosen not to move the game. Ian Rappaport gives us the details about the league's decision to keep the game in Tampa.
The game is going to go on as scheduled, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Kansas City Chiefs in Tampa on Sunday night, which is news considering we did not know how Hurricane Ian would affect this game. Of course, the Tampa Bay Bucs team is in Miami, still practicing there, was, of course, displaced by the hurricane, going to head back after practice on Friday along with their pets to get back to their houses and play on Sunday. As far as what went into the decision, my understanding is the league spoke to the offices of both the governor and Mayor Jane Castor today. Both of those were supportive of the decision. The stadium, which hosted more than 1,100 first responders and other local officials in pre-position and deploy resources, it never lost power, but the stadium, of course, was of good use during Hurricane Ian. The airport, by the way, as far as fans having to get there, will be open at 10 a.m. on Friday, and the league, and we have also learned the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are going to have charitable resources able to be donated to so many who have been affected by Hurricane Ian.
So that's Ian Rappaport on NFL Game Day with the considerations that went into this decision to keep Sunday Night Football in Tampa. And actually, Tom Brady was asked about it too, about the fact that there'll be a football game in the aftermath of what was a major hurricane for the Gulf Coast and South Florida.
I always feel like sports has brought people together over a long period of time, you know, and, you know, watching different adversities, whether it was 9/11, whether that was Katrina. Sports has an amazing way of kind of healing wounds and bringing people together and bringing communities together. And I think anytime you can participate in things like that, it's a great feeling. And, you know, I know it means a lot for us to have the opportunity to go out and play for our fans always. But, you know, after what so many people have gone through in the state, you know, it's great to go out there and give them something to cheer about.
So Tom Brady and the Buccaneers will host the game on Sunday night against Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs. And a little bit later, we'll hear. I thought they were fantastic remarks and interesting insight from Patrick about Tom Brady, who is the gold standard for quarterbacks still playing and still playing well at the highest level at 45 years old. It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio. Again, we're going to get to everything that you need to know, or maybe not everything. That's probably overstating a little bit. We don't have that kind of time. We're going to get to as much as we can pack into week four, what we think you need to know, but we'd love to hear from you about week four as much as football was secondary following the scary injury to Tua, the good news is he is okay. He's being treated by doctors. He went home with his teammates, and I feel much relief now in being able to talk about football because he's all right. Paul is listening in Boston. Paul, welcome to After Hours CBS Sports Radio.
Good evening, Amy. Thank you for your balanced and fair angle. I just want to comment that, well, I've never seen a game on Amazon. It's my first time using my Prime, so I had the phone right in front of me. And I'm a big fan of Tua and what that team's doing. I had called them to be a top team. And the hit that he took, it wasn't really that bad, but I've never seen a player, when their hands do that, that's usually a sign of something extremely severe and much worse than it turned out to be. And I had a moment there where I was very nervous and nauseous, thinking, oh, no, God, no, not now. This is going to be the one. And when I say the one, this is what I've been saying for years now. After we lost Dale Earnhardt, they installed Hans, head and neck restraint system, which now when you look at it, well, how could they not have it? I think it's time to take those stupid half-inch cushion pads out of the helmet. We have the technology. Mercedes and Audi and BMW have it. They could put an air pillow in there that at a certain impact is gonna take and absorb that, because the hits and what we saw tonight and what we're learning about CTE, there's a certain point where the information and the action and the result consequences is going to pile up to where we demand as a culture, as a players' union, to give especially the quarterback a better protection. The technology's there. You don't want to wait till something more serious comes out of this, because that was disturbing to see his hands like that. And I want to congratulate you also. Remember that he did look good up to that point. He threw a ball over the linebacker in between two defenders. And he looked great. I don't think he had any issues. But it's when something like this happens after a prior incident, people's emotions can get maybe on a little bit of a whirlwind. It's time to focus on a solution and not imagine more problems, because these players are really risking themselves.
Well, I will say this. The NFL is constantly updating its technology when it comes to helmets. You may remember a couple of years ago when they were requiring all helmets to be updated, and players had a choice among only a few league-approved helmets. I'm not sure if you remember that Antonio Brown balked at it. This was like his brief stint with the Raiders. He balked at it. Even Tom Brady was not interested in wearing the new helmet. He didn't want to. But the NFL mandated it with the new testing that they done on the technology. And, of course, the helmets were designed to prevent more head injuries and more blows to the head, even if the head snaps back and hits the turf. And I was a humongous Dale Earnhardt fan, senior. And I remember, of course, what happened at Daytona. And yes, you're right. He resisted wearing the Hans device. A lot of drivers already were. He didn't like it. He felt like it was too restrictive. So he was in his car without it. And maybe it would have saved his life. Now it's mandated. But I will tell you that the NFL is constantly updating its helmets. And I've even heard this offseason that they're going through it more and more. They feel like there's progress because of the new technology and the new helmets. Concussions and head injuries were down last year. So yes, it's scary to see, but how do we know that the helmet Tua was wearing didn't prevent this from being a lot worse than it was?
But we don't. However, we do know this. And Amy, I want to add to your point. Imagine when you look at videos of James, of the running back, when those players were trying to literally kill each other and the impact they took. It's a miracle we made it through that era. Like what James Brown went through.
I don't know that we did, sir. There are so many former professional football players who are not only dealing with the effects of having played in that era, the brutal nature of the game, the fact that there wasn't the technology and the protection, and there wasn't the treatment and the recognition of head injuries. Many of them are dealing with the long-term effects of that. In addition, we've lost players who played in that era, whether it be because they had injuries that carried over, or in some cases, suicide because of everything that was happening in their brain. So we didn't make it through unscathed. The NFL has taken major hits, which is why there were $9 billion in lawsuits that were filed against the league that the league has had to pay out to former players.
Yes, ma'am, and not unscathed. I mean, the risk of fatality, I'm shocked it wasn't more. And you're 100% right. What Aaron Hernandez went through, Chris Benoit from the WWE, there's a clear and present danger. And I honestly think an impact, we have airbags for everything, for our children, for our dashes. These guys are getting smashed up six, seven times. They say each game is like three or four car wrecks. It's time to bring a much better, like an impact bag that in the neck and head, on a certain pound per square inch, is going to deploy. That would create immediate and effective reduction in the impact, because I've been through it. I got run over by a car, Amy. I have multiple fractures in my skull. My head and brain swelled up the size of a watermelon. They said it's a miracle I lived. So I know what it means for blunt force trauma. And there's better ways to absorb that impact than an upgraded helmet.
Okay, well, I appreciate your insight. I'm obviously not somebody who has any impact on what they do with the helmets. I just know that they're constantly evaluating their technology and putting them through testing and monitoring the numbers. And they certainly have made upgrades with their helmets over the last few years. Paul, I appreciate your phone call. Thank you so much.
Thank you. God bless you.
For those of you who were wondering about the response that Tua had and how the NFL and the independent neurologists view it, it's called a fencing response. I didn't know that, but some of you have found me on Twitter and I've been reading about it. It's called a fencing response when your fingers seize up like that and you lose kind of that ability to move them, to straighten them out. It almost looks like they're severe cramping is or arthritis. For those of you who've ever seen what rheumatoid arthritis can do to people, your fingers get gnarled and you can't move them. And so it's called a fencing response in that moment after a head injury. And the NFL and the NFLPA is aware of this response, and it's what it falls under the umbrella of no-go, meaning that if you have that response on the field or if there's that visual response to any type of a hit or a head and neck injury, right away, you're out. That's it. You're immediately in concussion protocol. I mean, it seems fairly obvious, right? But that is one of the stipulations, that if there's that type of a fencing response, which is what it's called, it's an immediate no-go under league concussion protocols. And actually, wobbling is supposed to be too. So going back to last week, if a player is wobbly and unsteady on his feet, that's also supposed to be a no-go, that a player is not supposed to be allowed back on the field, which is why the NFLPA is investigating. Though, again, he reportedly cleared concussion protocols at halftime of that Bills game. All right, you can find me on Twitter, A-Law Radio. I always appreciate the intelligent discussion. I always appreciate that you're passionate about this. And, again, I would just say it's hard to imagine Mike McDaniel throwing his quarterback out there. It's a young man that he clearly has already bonded with and that cares very much about. This moment shook Mike McDaniel as well to see it. He said Tua was calling for him when he was on the field. I have a hard time imagining that this guy who never played in the NFL, we're not talking about some really tough dude who used to be a linebacker and used to hit people for a living. We're talking about a nerd, essentially. And I say that with affection. It's not a slight. I'm a total nerd about some things. We're talking about a football nerd. He's not a big, huge, tough football veteran. He's a coach. He's a brainiac. His football's all his head. So it's hard to imagine he would just sacrifice the well-being of his young quarterback. That doesn't seem like him from what we know about him to this point. So the NFLPA will investigate, and obviously we will hear more about it moving forward.
Football season is here. The new Odyssey app lets you stay connected to your NFL team, your station, your shows. Follow your favorite stations and come back again and again. Get real-time updates on everything you care about. Miss your show? Jump back to their awesome rewind feature. The Odyssey app is NFL football, live and on demand, wherever you are, whenever you want. And did we mention it's all free? Download the Odyssey app today. Football season is here. The new Odyssey app lets you stay connected to your NFL team, your station, your shows. Follow your favorite stations and come back again and again. Get real-time updates on everything you care about. Miss your show? Jump back to their awesome rewind feature. The Odyssey app is NFL football, live and on demand, wherever you are, whenever you want. And did we mention it's all free? Download the Odyssey app today.
Hey guys, Mike Valeni for Cash the Ticket podcast. If you like sports betting or if you just like sports, it's the podcast for you. We try to cover all the big games and maybe some of the games you didn't even know were important, give you some angles, pick some winners, have a good time, and hopefully help you meander through college and pro football season. So join us a couple times a week to get all your information you need to bet the games that you watch. It's Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast. This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Hey, Law, what's going on?
What's going on? Food. Food is finally going on.
When you were talking about your chili recipes, I had my wife go online. She's like a chili freak along with me. If I could crawl through that phone line to your studio, I would take that last call.
I love your show. Been a fan of it since I heard you talking about chili from Wendy's.
They completely burst my bubble because apparently it's not very healthy for you. So now I just make my own chili.
With that being said, I went and tried the chilies from Wendy's and I loved it.
Oh, good for you.
I'm living very unhealthy at the moment.
Amy's taking your calls at 855-212-4CBS.
Thanks for joining us. Man, I take a breath and we're already 90 minutes into the show, but this is important stuff to talk about Tua, to talk about players' health, to recognize that they're not just robot athletes, they're people, and they've got families. And we heard from Josh Moser in Cincinnati that Tua's parents happened to be in Ohio for the game, so they were able to be with him. He just got married, which I didn't realize. I mean, it was kind of funny over the whole Aaron Judge watch for home run number 61 to hear more about his family and to see his parents around and to know that he just got married in 2022 to his high school sweetheart, right? It really does put into perspective that these are human beings. They happen to be incredible athletes and so good at what they do. But it shouldn't be more important than the fact that they are sons, brothers, uncles, husbands, dads in some cases. So I believe it was one of those nights in one of those games. My heart just wasn't in the football after Tua's injury until we heard that he was all right. And getting the further update from Josh in Cincinnati was tremendous. I did just tweet that in case you missed it on Twitter, A-Law Radio. We've also got our poll up, the After Hours Game of the Week, and I'm trusting Producer Jay. I really am. I don't know. In fact, I have not memorized the schedule. I very rarely do that. That just seems like a waste of brain space when it's on the internet in front of me whenever I would need it. Anyway, so I'm trusting Producer Jay when he puts these games into our poll. So the poll is up on both Twitter and now Facebook, After Hours with Amy Lawrence, and we're going to dive into some of the preview. We did talk about the fact that the Bucs are still hosting Sunday Night Football against the Kansas City Chiefs. And if you haven't been watching the track of, it's now a hurricane again, Hurricane Ian, well, then maybe you don't realize that it's actually about to make landfall for a second time. It had gone out over the Atlantic, so kind of across Northeast Florida, in the Jacksonville and Daytona Beach area, and then out into the Atlantic off of the Georgia coastline, only to pick up steam, only to pick up some fury, and is now headed back over land, partially in Northeast Georgia, but really taking aim at South Carolina and then North Carolina. And there's all kinds of hurricane warnings and the wind warnings and everything else. In fact, my brother, who's in Virginia, the DC area, said that Virginia has been declared a state of emergency, even though there are some other states between Ian and where my brother is. But yeah, just a lot of really sad stories. Not only have families and businesses lost so much, but at this point, they're still looking for people. They still have people that are unaccounted for. And the last I knew, there were nearly 10 people who had died. I don't know the updated number, but they're looking for a lot of people still. If you don't know anything about the Gulf Coast of Florida, there are a couple of islands off of the coast that are very popular vacation destinations. My brother and his family have been there a bunch. I haven't been since I was a kid, but Sanibel Island is one of them. And there was a bridge collapse from the mainland, a bridge that connected the mainland of Florida to this Sanibel Island, and the bridge collapsed. And so as of earlier on Thursday, there was no way for car traffic to be able to get out to this island. The only way to access it was via boat. And so there were first responders that were heading out there. I heard some reports that there were still people that were stranded waiting for rescue because the floodwaters were rising. I have a family member who lives in Northport. She just moved there. I mean, she's only been there for a few weeks, right into the face and the teeth of this hurricane. And she thankfully met some friends that invited her to spend the night with them. But she was saying that the flooding now is the major concern, even on the back half of this storm, that there's a big mess everywhere that she can see, major cleanup. She says plants and trees have had a lot of damage, thankfully not damage to the house that she's in. But she said so many plants and trees uprooted and destroyed. And she said there were chainsaws going all day long for obvious reasons, because people probably can't access the roads if there's trees down. And then Marco Belletti's here in studio. I have some friends that live in Orlando. My friend, Aaron, so her yard was flooded, and she lives on a street that was flooded. So she sent me a photo of her in a kayak, kayaking down her street, because there was no roads access, obviously. She said the only vehicles that could get through were very large pickup trucks, so the kind that were above the water level, which, of course, you're not supposed to be driving through standing water. But she was literally out in her street in a kayak.
Yeah, it's wild. I mean, really, it's, you know, we've had some, everybody's had flooding, I guess, I'm sure at some point. But
right.
The one that I remember from one of the storms that we had in New Jersey, the water was actually up to be on a street level. It was to where the stop is on the stop sign.
Mm.
So same thing. We actually had to kayak to one of the stations that I was actually working at.
Did you
to
really?
To get there. We were quasi on the air, like kind of on the air, like not really though. And yeah, we had to take that, and there was like these big bucket waiter things that they would take people in and out of. And I only went once because they were like, all right, that's enough. Until we get this, you can't go to work. And I was like, okay, it's fine with me. You know, like I don't live there. That's right. Why, like, seeing everybody that lived around that area, it's heartbreaking. It's hard to see it. And then after it's done, unfortunately, you see everybody's basically their house on the front lawn because they got to start over. It's wild. It's wild. It's hard to comprehend until you see it.
I think it was Hurricane Harvey a few years ago that was in the Houston area. And my mom and her husband were also flooded in. Now, their home happens to be on a slab, so their whole entire backyard was flooded. Their pool was flooded. In fact, their pool was underwater, weirdly enough, right? Like, they couldn't even see their pool. Their whole back patio was underwater. The water came all the way up to their windows, but it was on a slab, so the house didn't. And they're on the high side of the creek. The creek, quote unquote. But the house didn't get flooded. But on the other side of the road, not only was her entire street and neighborhood flooded, people were using boats to get up and down the road. Mm-hmm. But on the, just literally, I could throw a baseball and hit the house on the other side. Those homes were all flooded out because they just happened to be a little lower. Right. And I remember they had more than 60 inches of rain. 60 inches.
It's like, wild.
That's insane.
And again, then you know, once everything dies down and the floods go away, like, still, you talk about houses. I mean, does the foundation get damaged too?
Right.
Like, do they have to basically knock down the house? I mean, there was plenty that I saw in that area that I was in New Jersey that it basically, like, you could see it. It was gutted to the point where if you have molding inside and you cut out the drywall, think about that for a whole house.
Right.
But it was like the foundation's shot. Like, you have to basically redo it. It's again, until you actually, it's hard to comprehend until you physically see it. And I know that's ridiculous because you should be able to get it. But I don't think you do until you see that. Like, I didn't get it. Like, I didn't get it fully until I actually witnessed it with my own eyes. So the idea of it, it's rough. I mean, these are people's lives. I mean, you're talking about being safe, obviously, and then being able to start over again. I can't imagine it.
Yeah. I mean, having lived in Tornado Alley for 4 years and covering those types of storms in Oklahoma, certainly seeing that kind of damage too. And yeah, water is dangerous, and then there's really no way to stop it a lot of times either. So thinking about the people in South Florida, but not just South Florida, now it's Hurricane Ian once again. So it's been upgraded to a hurricane, and the Carolinas and Georgia are expecting the heavy rain and the storm surge even overnight on into Friday. And the wind is supposed to start to really increase in the coastal Carolinas on Friday. So we're thinking of you. Glad that in many cases in Florida, like Tampa, it didn't get a direct hit. And so that metro didn't end up with the same type of impacts. But of course, the hurricane came ashore around the Fort Myers area, and so many people there are now cleaning out, trying what they can to figure out the damage. And I've heard billions and billions of dollars, obviously, and still waiting, praying that people who are now unaccounted for can be found. You can find us on Twitter, After Hours CBS, also on our Facebook page. We're glad you're with us on this last show of the work week. Always good to have Marco. I mean, he just kind of shows up when he feels like it. It's not like he's here all the time.
Pretty much.
And so we're thankful when he graces.
Football season is here. The new Odyssey app lets you stay connected to your NFL team, your station, your shows. Follow your favorite stations and come back again and again. Get real-time updates on everything you care about. Miss your show? Jump back to their awesome rewind feature. The Odyssey app is NFL football, live and on demand, wherever you are, whenever you want. And did we mention it's all free? Download the Odyssey app today.
Hey guys, Mike Valeni for Cash the Ticket podcast. If you like sports betting or if you just like sports, it's the podcast for you. We try to cover all the big games and maybe some of the games you didn't even know were important, give you some angles, pick some winners, have a good time, and hopefully help you meander through college and pro football season. So join us a couple times a week to get all your information you need to bet the games that you watch. It's Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Football season is here. The new Odyssey app lets you stay connected to your NFL team, your station, your shows. Follow your favorite stations and come back again and again.
Get real-time updates on everything you care about. Miss your show? Jump back to their awesome rewind feature. The Odyssey app is NFL football. Live and on demand. Wherever you are, whenever you want. And did we mention it's all free? Download the Odyssey app today.
Is us with his presence.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
April, another one of those five rookies in their lineup tonight. And here's the next pitch. There's a ground ball on the left side. Skips off the glove of Soto. He tried to make a diving stop on that one. And that's going to be a hit. The first hit of the night. Their 24th batter of the night gets the first hit against Ohtani. And that was close there. Soto, even had he stopped it, I don't know that he would have been able to get the throw to first in time. And it was a hit.
Oh, legit hit.
Yeah.
He had everything working tonight. And when he does that, these things are going to happen. But it was a really cool night to be a part of. And when we got through the seventh, I really, really thought it was going to happen. But unfortunately, we'll wait till next time.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Phil Nevin about his ace, Shohei Ohtani. Listen to this. There were more than 31,000 people there in Anaheim to watch this game. One of their largest crowds of the season. Obviously, their largest crowd of the series against the A's, because why would you be watching either the A's or the Angels right now unless you are the most dedicated of fans? So, Shohei Ohtani still puts butts in the seats. And even as he took a no-hitter through the seventh and on into the eighth, he actually had two outs in the eighth when it was broken up, there were chants of MVP, MVP. Now, I think Ohtani is a unicorn. He's unique. There is no one like Shohei Ohtani in baseball. However, he is valuable, but he cannot be the most valuable when his team is nearly 20 games below 500 and when his team is not going to the playoffs. So value is in the eye of the beholder, right? That old adage that beauty is in the eye of the beholder. Value is also in the eye of the beholder, which is why you have a lot of different people across the country from various outlets who vote for MVP awards. Theoretically, you want it to be cross sections of the entire country, because that way you get a better idea. It's more objective. Those who are seeing Ohtani on a more regular basis than seeing Aaron Judge or others, I mean, it kind of balances each other out. That's the idea. He's very valuable. He's valuable to the point where he puts butts in the seats. That's valuable. But if you're talking most valuable and you look at a Triple Crown candidate, potentially a Triple Crown winner like Aaron Judge, who also is an amazing defensive player and has been manning center field for most of the season. Forget the home run record just for a second. How about the number of RBI he has on the year? And his team has been first place in the division almost the entire season and is the number two seed in that same league. So that's how I look at value. Not to diminish anything that Shohei Ohtani has done. It's potentially never going to be replicated in Major League Baseball. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Ohtani pitches the full eight innings in picking up his 15th win. 15 wins. Phenomenal. His ERA is 2.35. He has 10 strikeouts, just two hits in throwing 108 pitches. And again, had a no-hitter through 7 2/3. Yes. Unbelievable value. Period. End of sentence. Same division, by the way. It's not just the Houston Astros who are headed to the playoffs. Ooh, wait. Is that Now, I don't believe in superstitions or jinxes, but I know Boomer Esiason would tell me, don't touch the money. Don't touch the money before it's been clinched. But I will tell you this, there's a whole lot of anticipation and excitement coming out of Seattle.
First and third, the 1-2 on the way to JP. Swing and a line shot off the glove of Young at third. Here comes Moore from third. He scores. The Mariners win it. Here at T-Mobile Park, they're going through the happy dance right now, and the Mariners' magic number is down to one. All they need is a win tomorrow, and this team is going to the playoffs for the first time in a couple of decades. Holy smokes, what a finish.
Even when you get down in the 10th inning, 11th inning, whatever innings we're in out there, there's no doubt that we're going to come back, tie the game, and win the game. That's just how this team's been wired all year long. We've played a lot of games like that. Our guys are certainly used to it. We had some big hits and big at-bats there at the end.
That is the voice of Scott Servais. I saw a quote from him on Twitter. I'm not sure if I can find it because it was last hour. I'll see if I can find it so I can quote him directly about the playoffs. What you need to know is the Mariners are one win away, or a loss by, I guess it's the Orioles who are chasing them, right, in the American League wildcard race. One is the magic number, just one. I've seen a lot of tweets from people who cover the Mariners, and they're almost incredulous thinking about the span of years, the decades it's been since the Mariners last made the postseason. Think about it for a second. Where were you? And this is, it's a tough question to ask if you think about what else was happening in the fall of 2001. But do you remember where you were the last time the Mariners were in the postseason? My gosh, my life looks so different than it does right now. I hadn't even made the full-time jump to sports radio the last time the Mariners were in the playoffs. 2001, longest drought in the four major pro team sports. Our friend Joe Fan, who's joined us in the last couple of months to talk about the Mariners, tweeted this. I was in sixth grade the last time the Mariners made the playoffs. To be on the eve of seeing this team clinch a playoff spot is pretty surreal. Rick Riz with the call on Mariners radio. So we are very close. Oh, here it is. I found it. This comes from Daniel Kramer. Just give him credit for it. He covers the Mariners for MLB. Scott Servais, quote, we will end the drought tomorrow. Ooh, producer Jay is a miracle worker sometimes. So apparently Scott Servais said it in front of a microphone.
The goal is to win the World Series. And it's not just to end the drought. We will end the drought tomorrow.
Oh,
we're going
boom.
To.
Jay, cut that puppy. Well, you can take the off at the beginning if you want. Scott Servais, we will end the drought tomorrow. Oh my gosh, I absolutely love that from the manager of the Mariners. All right, we just have a minute here before we hit the top of the hour. These have been a couple whirlwind 2 hours. Holy cow. We've got so much to do. We're going to talk about week four in the NFL. I was even hoping to mix in a few other headlines from the world of sports, but what happened with Tua took priority and took precedent. If you haven't seen the update, it's on my Twitter, A-Law Radio, and I will throw it up on Facebook here in a second, but we did give you the latest during the first hour of the show. Here's what we know about the Major League Baseball postseason. The Blue Jays have clinched a playoff spot, right? So they're going as a wild card. The Mariners are on the cusp. The only other team involved in that American League now, well, the Rays and the Orioles, right? So the Mariners actually have leapfrogged the Rays to take over that number two American League wild card spot. But neither the Mariners nor the Rays have clinched. The Orioles are running out of time. It's been a phenomenal campaign for the Orioles, a resurgent season for the O's and their fans. But they're five back of the Rays. And we've only got, what, six games to play? So they're on the verge of being eliminated. But neither the Mariners nor the Rays have clinched a playoff spot. The Padres lose to the Dodgers tonight. So they've set, by the way, LA has set a brand new record for franchise wins. They're now at 108, excuse me. But the Padres are trying to clinch a playoff spot. Phillies have a half game lead over the Brewers for the third NL wild card. It's tense. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence, CBS Sports Radio.
Hey guys, Mike Valeni for Cash the Ticket podcast. If you like sports betting or if you just like sports, it's the podcast for you. We try to cover all the big games and maybe some of the games you didn't even know were important, give you some angles, pick some winners, have a good time, and hopefully help you meander through college and pro football season. So join us a couple times a week to get all your information you need to bet the games that you watch. It's Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Football season is here. The new Odyssey app lets you stay connected to your NFL team, your station, your shows. Follow your favorite stations and come back again and again. Get real-time updates on everything you care about. Miss your show? Jump back to their awesome rewind feature. The Odyssey app is NFL football, live and on demand, wherever you are, whenever you want. And did we mention it's all free? Download the Odyssey app today. Football season is here. The new Odyssey app lets you stay connected to your NFL team, your station, your shows. Follow your favorite stations and come back again and again. Get real-time updates on everything you care about. Miss your show? Jump back to their awesome rewind feature. The Odyssey app is NFL football, live and on demand, wherever you are, whenever you want. And did we mention it's all free? Download the Odyssey app today.